April 27th at 12 p.m. More information at millersymphonyhall.org or the box office, 610-432-6715.
And you're tuned to WDIY Allentown, listener-supported community public radio. My name is Waldemar Vanofskis, and I'm your host for this Friday edition of WDIY Classics. And I'm pleased to announce that WDIY is partnering with the Allentown Symphony Orchestra in presenting Psychedelic Dreams, Saturday, April 13th at 8 o'clock, Sunday, April 14th at 3 p.m. at Miller Symphony Hall. Vanessa Perez, solo piano, performs Ravel's jazz-infused piano concerto in G, a program that also includes an imaginative new film visualizing the psychedelic dreamlike quality of Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique. More information is at millersymphonyhall.org, or you can call their box office, 610-432-6715. Pleased to welcome into our studio the maestra, the music director and conductor of the Allentown Symphony Orchestra, Diane Witry. She's a native of California, a very respected and innovative conductor. She is a music director, a guest conductor throughout the world. She is an author and she runs a conductor's seminar for new and aspiring young conductors. She has conducted orchestras all over the world, and we are so pleased to welcome her back to the microphones here at WDIY. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Great to be here. Rain and all.
And wind.
Slogged your way through. You should be playing the Tempest this weekend or something. but it's exciting. It'll be, however cold and windy it may be out today, it is supposed to clear off tomorrow and Sunday. It'll be nice to come out for the symphony this weekend. And very warm and friendly inside. Tell me about the program. Beethoven, what a way to start.
Beethoven is just a fabulous composer. And I liked putting Beethoven and Berlioz on the same program. Because Berlioz, I believe, really respected Beethoven as a composer. And I think when you hear the Symphonie Fantastique, there are musical fragments that are so Beethovenian in their character, and particularly this sort of descending scale that to me was so reminiscent of the big bass solos in the Ninth Symphony. And you have to realize that Beethoven wrote his Ninth Symphony in 1827, and Berlioz wrote his Symphonie Fantastique in 1830. So I believe that there's a correlation there of sort of admiration being put into Berlioz's piece. So those are sort of the bookends. And because both of these composers are so powerful in their own musical voice, I felt I needed something, what I call my Sherbert, in between, and that is the Ravel
a little
piece.
Palate cleanser.
It's the definite palate, because it's a totally different musical language that Ravel uses. It's very colorful and very interesting and exciting and innovative in its own way. And the second moon of the Ravel is just absolutely gorgeous, just soul-felt music. And so I felt that this made a very, very interesting program.
That's what I love about, you know, we've been doing this for a decade together, and I love the way you program music, because, you know, it's not just, you know, I'm going to say, I know what other conductors think. Sometimes I get the impression that that people look at the connections that might be on the face, like, well, so-and-so lived here, and he lived here, and so they have this sort of connection or whatever. And I love the way that you think about kind of the depth of the music and sort of those more intricate connections, not just sort of the ones on that you might see on the face. And that's just a brilliant way of putting together a concert program.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's almost like probably a good cook. You know, they sort of have an instinct for flavors. And sometimes I don't even really know why I put them together when I do it.
But it works.
But then later on, as I'm going back and really restudying the works, I go, oh yeah, of course this is why I did it. This theme is so similar to this theme. And there's a subconscious level of understanding the music that I think is sort of in my psyche that I go, oh, those are two flavors that I know are just going to complement each other in a really interesting way.
Right.
And it works really nicely.
That's like a little chili in your hot chocolate. You know, you wouldn't expect it, but boy, it really works. You know, good. So Leonore, The Overture.
Right? Yeah, number three.
Number three. That, you know, that's funny. I was looking for music for this. There's 2A and 2B and 3 and 1. Tell me about the different overtures.
Well, you know, Beethoven took a while to get this one right. And this was for his one and only opera, but the opera was not that successful. And I think he kept trying to rewrite it, and he rewrote the overtures. And I remember in school, one of my big analytical projects for a theory class was, of course, we had to analyze and compare, you know, Leonore number one with Leonore number two with Leonore overture number three. And then eventually Beethoven just gave up on the Leonore concept, and he wrote a whole new overture called the Fidelio overture, which is eventually what the opera became. But I think of all the pieces, I think Leonore number three to me is the best written, the most interesting composition. And it starts out with a very slow, beautiful adagio, sort of the descending scales, some beautiful clarinet writing. But then it goes into this very happy, sparky allegro, which I think sets the mood to me for the concert. And I always joke about the ending, because the ending is what I conceptualize as Leonora to the rescue, you know, and it's just sort of this triumphant music that ends it. And I think perhaps the overture is most famous for the fact that it has the two trumpet calls, and the trumpet calls are from a distant trumpet. So actually I have a trumpet player. You can do it where somebody leaves the stage and plays it, but that's really no fun, because then they're just backstage and it's not, you know, a distance thing. So I will have the trumpet player actually in two secret places, which you won't find out until you come to the concert, of where the trumpet player is going to be playing those two fanfares from.
You know, that's great. When you said usually they have them stand backstage, then my first thought was, I wonder where she's going to hide the trumpet.
Because you knew I wouldn't just have them backstage.
You wouldn't just have them backstage. Why don't we don't have time to listen to the whole overture, but should we listen to a little, you want the little the beginning or a little the end?
Either one is great, or we could listen to a little of both.
All right. This is a recording of Wilhelm Furtwängler conducting Beethoven along with the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra. This is the Leonore Overture number 3 right here on WDIY. That's the music of Ludwig von Beethoven right here on WDIY Classics, the Leonore Overture No. 3, Opus 72B. Wilhelm Furtwängler on a historic recording, the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra. It's from a box set collection released in 2006. The original recording dates back to 1944, and that was sort of the beginning, not quite the first half of the overture to Leonore. That piece of music will be the opening for the Allentown Symphony Orchestra's upcoming concerts this weekend, entitled Psychedelic Dreams at the Miller Symphony Hall, Saturday, April 13th. That's tomorrow at 8 o'clock, Sunday, April 14th at 3 p.m. More information is at millersymphonyhall.org. My name is Waldemar Vanofskis. I'm your host for this Friday edition of WDIY Classics, and we're pleased to welcome into the studio the music director and conductor of the Allentown Symphony Orchestra, the Maestro Diane Wittry. Also in the studio with us is Mr. David Upham. He is a outstanding conductor of a wide variety of ensembles. He has conducted professional symphonies, ballet, youth, and community orchestras. Originally from the Seattle area, now resides in the University near the University of New Hampshire, and is the conducting fellow for this weekend's concert. Diane, tell us a little bit about the conducting fellows. What do these guys do?
Well, for every single concert we have with the Allentown Symphony, we invite a conducting fellow to come, and they come from all over the United States, and it's a great opportunity for them to come and become a part of our family, see how an orchestra of our budget level functions. But there are also very specific jobs that I need each of them to do. So one of the things David's been doing is listening for balance in the hall and helping us with adjusting. We actually moved up the woodwinds yesterday on the stage to try and find a place where they would project more, because they were having to play too loud to get the sound to come over the strings, who are playing gloriously. It's just going to be a great big sound on the stage for this concert. But the real thing that he's going to be helping with for this concert is he will be actually running the film in the second half of the program, and that's a huge job. So there's a lot of weight on his shoulders, because the film is designed to be a what we call a button press film, to allow me more musical flexibility. So there are about, I think, 78 film clips, and then there's certain moments that have to line up with the musical score, so where he will be pressing that button.
So it's sort of like conducting, and you know, you have the it's almost like maybe recording a film score, in the sense that the you know, the music is going by and you're trying to sync the pictures with the right moment in that.
Yeah,
thing.
The whole thing is quite challenging.
No doubt. We saw Howard Shore conduct The Lord of the Rings at Radio City Music Hall. And that was an amazing thing.
Yeah.
They're showing the movie, and they're playing the soundtrack live.
Now, did he have a click track in his ear? Did he have a counter? He must have had something.
He has a screen, actually, in front of him that has little, like, colored dots or whatever.
So he probably had a metronome click.
Click, yeah.
What I will have is actually, I will have a time code. Mostly because we didn't know how to do a metronome click. You know, that takes a different type of skill set level. And so I'll actually have a time code. So when we do the film, I'll have written in my score where I need to be matching that time code. And so my challenge is staying with the film. But then there's certain parts of the film where I don't need, where the film is more generic and I can take more time.
We're going to get to the film. I want to talk about the film, but I want to meet David Upham first. David, welcome to WDIY.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. Tell us a little bit about your background. Now, this is probably a question I ask all the conductors that come through here, is that when you're in fourth grade and they hand you an instrument, whether it's a violin or a trumpet or, in your case, a
trombone.
When you're in fourth grade and you start blowing on that thing, or maybe fifth grade for the trombone, I don't know.
It was fifth grade for me.
Yeah, fifth grade. You don't think, oh, this is great, I'm going to be a conductor. At what point in your evolution as a musician did you realize that you could actually stand in front and wave your arms and be the director? What was there a person or a moment that inspired you?
Well, you know, I think in fifth grade, like a lot of boys, I was imagining being a train conductor and digging up dinosaur bones and those sorts of things. But I think about my freshman year of high school. I think about the time that most people will have a first serious imagining of what they might want to do. It's always been music for me. And one of those daydreams was conducting. And I think at that point that looking back at myself now, I realize I didn't necessarily have the confidence in myself to do that. I was pursuing it, but sort of, you know, holding back a little bit. And actually, when I got to my undergraduate at Luther College, a small school in Decorah, Iowa, I had some opportunities to conduct, and I went and knocked on the orchestra director's door and asked for some lessons. And it was really there that I got the encouragement and the experience to realize, well, maybe I could do this. And then I pursued some graduate study, and I keep studying. I mean, that was a good, wow, 20 years ago now that I finished my undergraduate. And it was just last spring that I went to work with Diane, just to continue to, in the effort to continue to advance my education. And I think there's always more to learn as a musician, certainly.
Wow, thrilling. And ironically or interestingly, we just listened to the Leonore Overture. This is a piece of music you know a little about. Tell me about your encounter with this piece of Beethoven.
Well, when I went and did my master's degree in orchestral conducting, my final project was to conduct the University of Northern Colorado Orchestra in the Beethoven Leonore Overture No. 3. So I actually was doing my own chart and my own self-report and study of the piece, and it was a great experience. And it's all the things that Diane has mentioned. The opening, it gets me every time, because there is this descending, this brilliant sort of opening chord, the descending scale, and at the end of the scale there's a sort of unexpected half step, and Beethoven takes you to what would be the most remote chord from the one that you're expecting. And with these first three Leonore overtures, I think he's attempting a little more literally to portray the story of the opera. And in my mind, I don't know what Beethoven was thinking, but in my mind, the scale is almost descending down to the dungeon where the hero is awaiting rescue. Because shortly after that, this clarinet and bassoon theme that Diane had mentioned is actually a quote of his aria that he sings from his depths of despair. And as we know, then Leonora comes to the rescue at the end in the brilliant triumphal symphony at the conclusion of the overture.
Wonderful. That's cool. For our listeners, we are visiting with the maestro Diane Wittry and the conductor who is serving as the conducting fellow, David Upham. And we're anticipating a pair of concerts this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, the 13th and 14th of April at Miller Symphony Hall. The Allentown Symphony is presenting Beethoven's Leonore as the opening, the overture to the concert this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And then we have some Ravel.
And some Ravel. Now things heat up. Now it's going to get warm at the Allentown Symphony Hall. Very exciting about the Ravel Piano Concerto in G. The liner notes here for the concert say jazzy. What is the word? Jazz infused piano. That's pretty.
Yeah, and you have to take jazz. I mean, there's a lot of different types of styles that go with the word jazz, and I see more sort of a Gershwin type of influence. It's sort of a lighter, you know, some glissando, some colors, but it's not jazz as we think of jazz nowadays. But it does have very rhythmic, interesting colors, and particularly the use of glissandos and effects. And there's a part that we were rehearsing last night that to me is going, and I was telling the people, you know, it should sound like taxi horns, sort of like the taxi horns in Gershwin's American in Paris. You know, sometimes when we have musical gestures on the page, we play them too literally. And for this piece, you know, we want to go for the effect, not so, you know, a glissando maybe with three notes written in it. We don't really want to hear da-da-da. We want to hear, you know, so we want to change the fingering so that the effects are there. And this piece is really about colors and effects.
Great. And to bring us those colors and effects is none other than Vanessa Perez. Some of the adjectives that have been used are breathtaking, impeccable, and brilliant, she is a Venezuelan American pianist. Began at a young age. By the time she was 11, she gave her concert debut in Caracas, Venezuela, where she performed a Grieg piano concerto, and has received awards from the president of Venezuela, and has
performed at concert halls all around the world with brilliant conductors and musicians, and we're so fortunate that she is joining us in Allentown this weekend with our little brilliant little symphony. Vanessa Perez, welcome to WDIY.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So glad you're here. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what it's like to grow up as a child virtuoso. There's a lot of pressure. I mean, I'm sure you've answered this question 1,000 times, but for our listeners, you know, it's an amazing thing. You know that it when for me as a for as someone who sits in the audience, when you see a little person, you know, kind of hobble up to the piano, climb up on that piano bench, and then just kind of rip up the piano, it's an amazing thing. What was it like? Was there a lot of pressure for you to excel, to perform when you were younger?
There was, but growing up in Caracas, it was also is where I felt I belonged. Mm-hmm. So when I found out my mother used to play. She's still alive, but she mm-hmm. left the piano. But she used to play at home all the time. And through her, I got my inspiration to start. And then the school where I went to was extremely musically oriented. So I felt I belonged. It was my way also. It was self-esteem. It was so many things for me. And I just from my first concert, I knew that I couldn't be, that I would work as hard as I had to, even though it was really hard sometimes. Sometimes I really didn't want to practice as much as I had to. I really didn't. But my mom was the force behind, and she's like, well, if you don't practice, no more lessons. So I would rush back to the piano and crying. I continued.
Yeah. No, were your parents musicians, or where did the piano come from in your house?
My mother.
Oh, your mother.
My mother. And actually, from Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata was the one to blame.
That's amazing. Yeah. And at some point, you cease being a child prodigy, and then you just become a brilliant adult pianist like you are now. Mm-hmm. What's it like for you? There must be sort of that adolescent transition from everybody loves seeing the cute 11-year-old girl on the piano bench to seeing a 15 or 16 or 18-year-old girl. And now, what, you're 20, 21?
Thank you so much.
But what's that? It must be difficult to transition from being the child prodigy to being an adult. Now you're competing with a bunch of other adults. Was that hard, or was it just normal for you to just continue to play and develop yourself personally apart from what else is going on around you?
It was hard. It was really hard. Child prodigy, I have sometimes issues with this word, because when I think of Mozart, I'm like, that was a child prodigy. I think I had a lot of facility, and yes, some things came easily, but some other things I had to work very hard for.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm smiling sometimes when you were saying about but yes, you realize the responsibility you have with the music, and also the transition, as you're saying, you're not longer the child that everybody's also more forgiving. Your interpretations are taking more and more seriously, and then you start to see the reality of that you have to really do your homework in every way, and just really have high goals to become the best you can in your own, in your possibilities, no? So that was a challenge, and that it continues to be all my life.
One of the things that's just recent, I saw on your website, and now I have in my hand, is this brand new CD, Chopin, The Complete Preludes. Tell me a little bit about the recording project here.
That CD came out last May. It's my debut on Telarc. It was a blessing. I just wrote to them with a sponsor in New York, wanted first to record playing the Chopin Preludes, and then I just wrote to them, and I got a call from Telarc saying that they would release it.
That's awesome.
So it was
that is so
it was
exciting.
A fairy tale. Yeah, I don't know.
Tremendous.
Yes.
Let's listen to pick a prelude. Tell me what we should listen to.
Well, if I think of the second movement of the Ravel, maybe the raindrop.
The raindrop. Now I have to find this. Tell me where.
It's number 16.
16. All right. Thank you very much. This is from a brand new recording on the Telarc label. Vanessa Perez, the
Oh, sorry, number 15 in D flat.
Okay.
Sorry.
Thank you very much. It doesn't say raindrop on here. What it does say is sostenuto in D flat.
Long
major.
Melody.
Yeah.
Yes, beautiful.
A brand new Telarc recording, Vanessa Perez, right here. The Music of Chopin on WDIY Classics. Thank you. That's the music of Friedrich Chopin, the Prelude Opus 28, number 15, also known as the Raindrop. One of 24 Chopin preludes. It is the longest of the set, and this is from a collection entitled The Complete Preludes of Chopin, Vanessa Perez on piano. You can hear Vanessa Perez live this weekend at Miller Symphony Hall, Saturday, April 13th at 8 o'clock, Sunday, April 14th at 3 p.m. as a part of a pair of concerts entitled Psychedelic Dreams, featuring the music of Beethoven, Ravel's Piano Concerto in G, and also a film accompanying Berlioz's Symphony Fantastique. More information, millersymphonyhall.org. or 610-432-6715. We have tickets to give away for this concert. You'll want to stay tuned. In just a few minutes, we'll be handing some tickets out. You can hear Vanessa Perez live. Vanessa takes my breath away. It just takes my breath away. It was so beautiful.
Thank you so much.
You know, when I was younger and maybe, I don't know, more immature, not that I'm that mature now, but I used to think that, you know, pieces like Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2, these large pieces, or the Grieg Piano Concerto, these were really hard to play because there were so many notes. And I was listening to Chopin this morning, some of the rest of this recording earlier today, and I thought, this is much harder. I said that the fewer the notes there are, the harder it is to play. That each note is worth so much more. You know, that one note in this piece of music is worth like 50 in Rachmaninoff too. And I mean, because even Chopin, sometimes he'll just play one note. He'll just play with one note or one sound. And you have to be right there. What's that like for you to play something like the Grieg Piano Concerto, which has lots of notes, very fast, very aggressive, and then play this, which is just a note, a simple note or two notes? What's that like for you?
Well, it's a different approach, definitely. They both have their deliciousness. As you said, Chopin, similarly to Mozart, is the quality of the notes. Like you're saying, there's fewer, and mind you, some of these preludes have 1 trillion notes too at the same time. In this particular prelude, there's not so many, and it's the quality of the notes what really counts. And you think about the melody, the singing a lot, the atmosphere, and you think of how I will convey this and play this, the approach, because once you hit the note on the piano, there's no going back. So so you have to work. I work very hard on that. And and then with Grieg, there's another type of difficulty because there's a lot of notes, memory of arpeggios running up and down, and there's this, yes, you can throw yourself more in a way. It's different difficulty. It's also, it's stressful in a different way, but yes, maybe this is a little, this is tougher. It is tougher, the fewer notes, yes.
I agree, and you know, I'm so glad that you played that beautiful Chopin, because it's so similar in character to the second movement of the Ravel that we're going to be playing, which we were talking about earlier. We think is one of the most beautiful things ever written. I mean, it's just absolutely gorgeous, and Vanessa has this opening where it's just her, and you know, we just sit and listen and enjoy it. But then as the orchestra joins, Ravel does these very long lines and a gorgeous English horn solo. There's a lot of good English horn on this concert, and a beautiful horn solo, a regular French horn solo, and just the colors. He plays with the colors of the sound so beautifully, and it's a wonderful moment of quiet in a concert that, you know, bookend by Berlioz and by Beethoven. This wonderful moment of quiet is just going to be really enjoyed.
Absolutely. Vanessa Perez, thank you so much for coming to WDIY. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you for having me.
I need to let our listeners know that in just about an hour, at 12 o'clock noon, there is a brown bag luncheon on stage at Miller Symphony Hall, and our conductors, our pianist, will all be there. Will you be playing? today?
Yes, I will.
Oh, okay. So at 12 noon. And so you can grab a sack lunch. You can head over to Symphony Hall at 12 o'clock and hear this preview in person of this great music that's coming up. If we have time at the end, we might listen to a little Ravel. We're a little tight here on the end. So you have to pick either Berlioz or Ravel. But we're going to squeeze something in. There's also a website, which is, your website is?
VanessaPerez.com.
VanessaPerez.com. Also on Facebook?
Yes.
Twitter too, or no?
No.
No
Facebook.
Twitter. Facebook. Facebook. And then I assume you can go to Amazon.com, or what's the best way to get the CD?
Amazon. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Amazon.com. Yes. And again, it's Vanessa Perez, Chopin's The Complete Preludes. All right. So now to Diane's little adventure, Berlioz. We talked about this probably a year ago, if not last summer, that Diane Whitry said to me, oh, I'm going to do this movie. We're doing Berlioz, and I'm going to do a movie. So tell me about this project.
Well, you know, this symphony by Berlioz was way ahead of his time. And it was written 3 years after Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. And yet it is so innovative. And one of the most innovative things about it is that he had what's called a program, or a story, that went with the symphony. And he insisted that the story be printed in the program and handed out to the entire audience. And this story really paralleled some experiences in his life. He was a very open person, and he felt things very, very deeply. So to understand the piece, you have to know the story. And the story is that Berlioz, when he was 27, he went to hear the play of Hamlet in Paris, and he saw the actress Harriet Smithson, and he fell madly, madly, madly in love with her. And so he then actually began to stalk her for probably 3 years. And because he was a student at that point, he was not a famous person. He thought to himself, well, I'm going to produce a concert of my pieces, and maybe she'll hear about it, and maybe she'll come. So he produces this concert, and of course, he invites her, and she doesn't come. And in fact, at that point, she's pretty much told all of her people that are handling her correspondence to not allow any information from this young composer. You know, she was very much afraid of him, actually, because he was stalking her. And so anyway, then he writes, a few years later, he writes this piece, Symphonie Fantastique. And at that point, he has been love-sickened for her for 3 years. I mean, he writes in his letters, he writes he can't eat, he can't sleep. All he can do is think of her, you know. And he saw her both in Hamlet and also in Romeo and Juliet. So he writes this massive symphony, which is really his own story. And in this story, which goes with, you know, if you go to the concert, you're going to get a copy of the story. The story is about a young, quote-unquote, artist who has overdosed on opium, and in this sort of delirious state has had this fantastic dream. And in the dream, in the first movement, he dreams that he's met this woman, and the woman is Harriet Smithson. He doesn't say that in the program, but we all know that that's what the case is. The second movement, they kind of get together and they dance at this ball, and it's a beautiful, happy sort of movement. The third movement is out in the countryside, and the music is an English horn and oboe echoing each other over the hillsides, and he is the English horn, the lower voice, and she is the oboe voice. And then it's these beautiful melodies of countryside and sort of happiness. But then at the end, she stops answering. The English horn calls out, and the oboe doesn't answer. Instead, you hear the timpani roll with the thunderclouds of the approaching storm. And he's realized that she has rejected him completely. And so he's very upset about this, and so he kills her. So we have to actually convey to the audience,
ta-da!
Yeah, in the film, that the end of that movement, that she's dead now. So her picture sort of splits apart with some blood on it.
Oh, and you gave it away.
Yeah, well, but we have to realize is there are no people in the film. Berlioz never actually met her in person. At that point in his life, when he wrote the piece, he had never met her. He had fallen in love with basically
this
her
ideal.
on stage and the billboard. So the billboard is what you keep seeing appearing in the clouds and appearing all sorts of places as he's thinking of her, But he doesn't know her at all. She's not even a real person. She's a figment in his mind. Sure. So the fourth movement is the
all
march.
All the more intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as soon as you meet her, it's like, whew, that's not.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But then the fourth movement is in the dream, is the march to the scaffold, where he has now been sentenced to death. And it's this sort of juxtaposition of this macabre person that's being marched to their death with sort of cheering crowds that have assembled to watch the beheading of the guillotine. And so, of course, there is guillotine photos that come through the film. And then at the end, the moment is when the blade slices the head off. But you don't see the head. It's we leave some things to your imagination. And then the blood sort of dripping, you know, at the very end of the fourth movement. And then the fifth movement barely...
I'm going to make my own movie. It's going to have little
well, you see why
rainbows and ponies.
But you see why I sort of thought this has to be put to film. Because, you know, I didn't make up this story. This is Berlioz's story.
Film noir here.
Yeah. So the last movement, he subtitles The Witch's Sabbath. And throughout this entire composition, his beloved has a melody. So Harriet Smithson has this melody, and every single movement, her melody appears. And so often in the film, her picture appears when her melody appears. And so in the last movement, it's The Witch's Sabbath, and he's taken her melody and he's distorted it, and he's now given it to the E-flat clarinet. And so instead of being this gorgeous, beautiful, slow melody, it's this ugly witch melody.
Sure.
So in this last movement, we have, you know, some witches, of course, have to appear. And we have some skulls and we have a graveyard and just a lot of different sort of visual images to kind of help you get into his mind. So the film is created from Berlioz's perspective as if you... sitting in the audience are Berlioz, and you are, and this is your dream.
What's going on in your head?
Yeah,
yes.
And this is the dream that he might have been experiencing, and within the film, alternating with other visuals and special effects is close-ups of instruments playing, but once again with no people, no faces. So the instruments are sort of expanded in space. And you can see the hands and the fingers, and often they're blurred on top of each other because he was on opium. So nothing was very clear.
You weren't altered when you were making this, were you?
No.
You were completely, okay, good.
And working on, this was done through Illusion Studios in New York with Jason Knobloch, did all the filming, the original filming for it. And then special effects were done by Rick Peckham through Peckham Publications. So they both worked on the film, and they were emailing, you know, snippets mm-hmm. back and forth and merging it together to create this film.
That's amazing. And so not only are you going to kind of be washed over by the music, but these images then start running through your head as well. It'll be quite the event.
I think so. And definitely a unique experience.
Psychedelic Dreams is the name of the concert. It's this Saturday, April 13th, Sunday, April 14th, Saturday at 8, Sunday at 3. More information is at Miller Symphony MillerSymphonyHall.org. In just about a minute, we have some tickets to give away. It'll be a very, very moving concert from I'm still recovering from Chopin and you're chopping people's heads off, you know. I had this PDQ Bach moment in your film, a PDQ Bach moment where you're playing Berlioz, and then in the middle of that, right when they're chopping the head off, you insert Vivaldi's Winter, you know, where they have this this sort of psycho kind of you know, right?
Actually opens the last movement. There is that sort of psycho, like
all of these things are in the music. You actually have an audible portrayal of the head coming off and bouncing down the steps. This is Berlioz's accomplishment in the music.
Yeah, he wrote in the music, and that's why I thought, you know, I've always thought that this should either be staged or, you know, some sort of film to recreate this, because it is, the story is so. Yeah. In the music itself, it's all there. Yeah. And the bells tolling at the end, you know, the Dies Irae at the last moment, it's just very,
powerful.
Very exciting.
Yeah, and, you know, it just says to me as a conductor, we talked a little bit about what it means to be, you know, a musician, to play the music and then to be a conductor. And the orchestra is your palette. And I'm going to say you're cheating, but you're not cheating, but you're expanding your palette from the orchestra to these visual images. And so, Diane, it's like a masterpiece here, multi multifaceted musical experience. It should be great.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
All right, for our listeners, this is your chance. As soon as we start the music here, in just about a couple of minutes, the number you're going to want to call this morning is 610-694-8100, extension 1. 610-694-8100, extension 1. And I believe I have at least three. Let me see. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro. I have four pairs of tickets for the concert this weekend. So you can either choose Saturday night or Sunday afternoon. 610-694-8100, extension 1 after the music starts. And I'll get you a pair of tickets for the concert this weekend. Diane Wittrie, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Vanessa
Always a pleasure.
Perez, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Enchanting. And maestro.
David
Upham, thank you
it's
for
been
coming.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. We're going to go out, and it's the conductor's choice. We're either going to listen to Ravel's second movement, or we're going to listen to one of these movements from the Berlioz Symphonie Fantastique. What would you like
I
to listen to?
I think we have to listen to – you have to come to the concert to hear the Ravel, but we're going to have to listen on air to the fourth movement of the Berlioz Symphonie Fantastique. This is the March to the Scaffold, where he's marching. It's what I told you, the juxtaposition of sort of the serious with the festive. And if we get to the end, you'll hear where the head gets chopped off. It's right after the clarinet plays her melody and then the slice of the blade.
All right. This is the music of Hector Berlioz. This is the Cleveland Orchestra under the direction of, who are we? Who do we have here? Pierre Boulez. Right here on WDIY Classics. Again, this piece of music will be performed in its entirety this weekend at Miller Symphony Hall with the Allentown Symphony Orchestra. The music of Berlioz for a Friday morning right here on WDIY.